Welcome to the Jessica Pennelly Podcast. I am the female coach to empower your mind and teach you how to become confident in your body. Join me on this voice journey as I hold space for you to reconnect back to yourself. Hello and welcome back to the Jessica Pennelly Podcast. Before I transition into today's episode, a very exciting episode for me to bring you, I need to say that tomorrow, so of time of recording, well, releasing this will be Wednesday the 10th, but if you're listening in real time, Thursday the 11th of March, I am hosting a free workshop called the Connection Workshop, where I will be revealing my CEA framework. The new framework of how everything that I coach, everything that I bring you, whether it is free or whether it is in my membership or as a private client, this framework is everything. This framework is what you need to master yourself as a woman. And I am bringing it to you in a free workshop with a free live Q&A at the end. It is hosted via Zoom and you can only get onto it in real time. There will be no replay. Head to the show notes below and go register if you're listening to this in real time. I have been putting it on my Instagram stories and a whole bunch of other platforms as well, Facebook, etc. But I wanted to let you all know, come join us, come on Zoom. You will get free coaching by me. You will be able to ask whatever question that you have in mind, anything you want me to go into depth. And I'm very, very excited not only to host live free coaching, but to also bring you the CEA framework. Because let me tell you, ladies, let me tell you right now, it is a game changer. And once you understand all of the elements of this framework and how to apply them in your life, you are able to master every single area of your life. And it is actually a framework that I have been working on to creating and bringing it into fruition for all of you in every single aspect of the business and all of the content that you assume. So assume all of the content that you consume. And I can't wait to have you all in the workshop. So definitely head to the show notes below, go sign up, come join us on Zoom, come ask me questions, and I cannot wait to hold space for you. Now that that announcement is over, I am very, very excited to bring you today's podcast episode, which is an interview with Byron Dempsey. I found Byron on TikTok. I came across a bunch of his videos. He has his own podcast, which he'll tell you about in the interview. And all his TikToks are little video film clips of parts of the podcast episodes. And fell in love, listened to his podcast, and I was like, I need to get this male energy on the Jessica Pennelly podcast. And so that is exactly what I've done. So without further ado, here is my interview with Byron Dempsey. Hello, guys. So I'm so excited to bring on some male energy onto the Jessica Pennelly podcast. Byron Dempsey, hello, how are you going?
I'm amazing. Thanks so much for having me on.
No, thank you. So everyone, I found Byron on TikTok, the power of TikTok, and I think I stalked your page for a good hour, and I was like, all right, I'm going to start listening to this guy's podcast. But before I give away anything, Byron, why don't you tell everyone who you are and what do you do?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Byron Dempsey. As you mentioned, I'm a host of the Driven Young podcast, which is a podcast dedicated to educating and inspiring the younger generation with practical life skills we don't learn in school. I really target Gen Z, so kind of like 15 to 22 year olds, kind of senior high school as well. And we just cover so many different things like relationship, communication skills, networking, financial literacy, nutrition, health, basically a lot of stuff that I think we should learn in school, a lot of fundamental skills, soft skills, as some people call them. And yeah, I built a brand, as you mentioned, through TikTok mainly. So I cut up snippets of the podcast and post that on TikTok, and that's been the most beneficial platform for me because that's where young people are, right?
And
now I'm looking to expand that into a podcasting network where we're bringing on quite a few other shows and really trying to grow that as much as possible. I also help run a company called 530 Club, which is where we meet at a cafe at 5:30 every morning. And we've got about 20 clubs around Australia. and I'm being trained up to be a speaker for another company called Empower You, which is a personal development event for teenagers, which is really exciting. So they all fit within, you know, that brand of helping younger people.
That is exciting. And so last week I got on a call with Byron and I was like, all right, I want to collab. I want to get you onto the podcast. And I was like, hang on, how old are you? And you're 22, aren't you?
Yeah, 22.
What was really, that just surprises me because mature beyond your ages and I love it. But what was really the driving point for you to look at how much you've started? What was the driving point and why?
Yeah, so I mean, I was making films or since I was about 11 years old, I've been making videos. You can actually still find them on YouTube, like lightsaber battles with me and my brother and my friends, gun battles, just whatever fun stuff. That was a big passion of mine that slowly turned into something I started making money on. In high school, I started creating music videos for my teachers and I started filming dance concerts as a part-time role. So I'd go and I'd film the concerts and we create them into a DVD for the students. So I did a lot of that. And so after graduating high school, I knew that was a field I wanted to go into, which also meant I didn't really need an ATAR because it's like, you know, film and media, it's not very ATAR specific. Unlike, you know, want to be a doctor or something. Mm. And so I knew I didn't need ATAR. I didn't really want to go to university, even though I had checked it a lot of unis. And my mum made me apply just as a backup. And so I applied, I got into Wollongong University for like film and media, but I just couldn't see the value in doing it. And so instead I just like, kind of started living my life. I just was like, well, why don't I just go make some videos? So I started making films. I got a part-time job as disability support work just for regular income. Otherwise, I was just freelancing. About 6 months in, I landed a job with a guy called Glenn Carlson, and I was kind of like his D-Rock, if you know Gary Vee. I was like filming, following him around, making social media videos to build his brand. And he has a company called Key Person of Influence, which is about how to build your brand in the business world so that whenever someone thinks of a certain industry, they think of you because you're the key person of influence in that industry. So that was the world I was introduced to. And so within like a month or two, I was learning so much about networking, communication, leadership, how to run a business, social media, marketing, all these different skills. And I was like, I've learned more than in a month with this guy than I did in all of year 12. And that was in my head for a while. And over time, that kind of, I kept asking people, you know, about these different things, and I'd see what other people had of the opinions on school. And I realized that it was a very popular opinion that school wasn't teaching us very relevant tasks. It wasn't just me. And I just got more passionate to a point where I was like, I want to do something around this. And so basically, I went to a podcasting conference and I was like, podcasting's great. And I realized there's all these different things. And so podcasting was the best medium to get out my message. So I never intended to start a podcast. I just recognized that as the best way to get out my message because it means I can bring on experts and guests and cover topics that I'm not an expert on.
100%. I just want to go back to, you know, you being in high school because I feel like when I was in high school too, the societal norm and what's still kind of the norm is, you know, graduate, get a good ATAR, go to university, get the standard 9-to-5 job. Obviously, as you touched on, we need those jobs, doctors, lawyers, accountants, et cetera, of course. But what was the point? Because I'm fairly similar. I was there and I felt so much resistance. And like, I still attended university, did a business degree, loved it, made friends, but I just still knew in that time, like, hang on a second, this isn't sitting right with me. What was the point where you kind of recognize, no, I can't do this. I don't want to do this.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I actually look back and I go, I can't believe I didn't go to university. Like,
okay.
I look back and I go, well, every single one of my friends went to university. I was the only one who didn't go, especially because I didn't really have a plan. I just kind of like, and to me, it wasn't that much of a big decision. Like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I look back and I go, I can't believe I did that. Like, I look back at the pressure everyone else had and I had on myself. And I think the thought of having to do exams so quickly again was so disgusting to me. I was so bad at exams. I remember when we had graduation, everyone was celebrating, like, no more exams. I'm like, you're going to be doing exams in like 3 more months.
Yeah.
First semester of university. Like, sure, still celebrate. We'll finish high school and stuff, but stop saying no more exams. You guys have 5 more years.
Yeah.
And there wasn't really a snap point. I grew up with quite entrepreneurial parents.
Okay.
Doesn't mean they were super successful. Like, they had a bunch of different businesses as I was younger, and we actually didn't have that much money. But I did have very entrepreneurial parents. One of them, growing up, my dad actually had a networking company. So all around Australia, they had different groups. And I would actually attend some of these when I was like 13 or 14. And so I kind of was touching in this space.
Mm.
And so I realized there was this whole world that school doesn't really teach us about. And so for me, it was honestly, I think it was just the idea of going to university was so sickening to me because I'm so bad at exams. And I just want to enter the adult world and have, you know, create my own life that I just didn't want to go. So yeah, it's a difficult question to answer.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Do you feel that because of your upbringing with your parents being entrepreneurial, do you think that was a really big driving factor into how you see the world now? Do you think it would have been different if they weren't like that?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, it obviously that helped. The big thing that I had, big advantage I had was my parents didn't like care that I didn't go to university. They didn't like judge me. They didn't force me to go down that pathway, which I know a lot of kids have, you know, if they wanted to do the same thing, their parents would be like, what are you doing? What are you going to do? Like, you needed a degree sort of thing. And they might've been pressured into doing one. However, when I didn't do that, my mom and dad didn't guilt me or make me feel bad. They just, you know, they kind of accepted my decision. However, yes, I do think having entrepreneurial parents did help me get into that world. I also got into podcasting and listening to personal development and, you know, all those sort of like Gary Vee sort of people when I was about 16, which really unlocked me to, holy crap, there's a whole new world here that I was unaware of. So it's kind of the combination of a few things. And as I mentioned, I was lucky what I wanted to do, which was video, didn't require a university degree. Had I wanted to be a lawyer, had I wanted to be something else, and there is no other way to, you know, be a lawyer or a doctor without getting a degree, I would have had to go to university, right?
That is so true. Did you get any slack from your friends or other people who weren't family who were like, okay, what are you going to do then? Why aren't you going to university?
Not to my face.
Okay.
I don't know what happened behind my back. Maybe. I assume people probably said stuff. However, it was interesting. My mum said, as I mentioned, she was, you know, totally backed my decision because it wasn't like, oh, I'm just going to not go to university and do nothing. It was, I'm not going to get university. I'm going to get a job and I'm going to start looking and making video work. And I also did like a part-time degree, like a 2 nights a week at a film school. So I was doing stuff as well. But my mum even admitted the other day, she was like, just a tiny part of me when I'd be talking with your parents' mates or something, and they'd be like, oh, my son's going to uni, my son's doing this. At a time, and, you know, when I said, oh, Byron's just working or something, or he's just, you know, making videos or something, there was a part of me that went, had a little bit of self-doubt and stuff, which is super interesting because I do think a lot of parents want their kids to go to university for selfish reasons. So when they're at a barbecue with the other parents, they can go, my son's studying law. My son wants to be an engineer. Look how smart he is. He's doing this and this.
Yes, I couldn't agree with that. Yeah, anymore. That's so true. I think there comes, being a parent, that form of validation. Like, look at what my kid's doing and he's going this way that we've been taught, I guess, is the traditional way, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and look, there's nothing wrong with the traditional way. I'm not against university. I'm more against the way we're forced into university with very little thought. The amount of people who would do a degree and they're like, I had no idea what this degree was like. It's like, you're about to spend 3, 4, 5 years of your life and like $50,000. Why do we do such little research into this? It's because we have such a short time frame. Like, it's the middle of year 12. You've got all these exams coming up. You've got all this stuff going on. And you have to figure it, choose your, you know, start in, you know, early entry or start applying for universities. Also, you're 17. How are you supposed to know what you want to do at 17?
I think that's absolutely wild. And until we got off the phone the other day, I was really thinking about it. And I thought the same thing. We have such a short time period to actually choose and decide. And yeah, you know, you're in high school. You have these 5 years. You're like, okay, it's going to lead to this. But really, it's like half a year. You start deciding, you start putting in applications, you start studying. And I was thinking, wow, you don't realize when you're 17 how crazy that is to kind of quickly get into something.
I know. It's actually insane. Like, I think I'm such a huge advocate of taking a gap year, like traveling, figuring out where you're working. One of my dreams is to create like a gap year program for young people, very low cost. It's like for people who don't want to jump into university straight away, but don't know what they want to do. It's like, join the gap year program. We'll, you know, we'll get you some work. We'll get you internships and different stuff and they can go travel. Just like have fun. You explore and experience more in that year and figure out what you want to do than if you just jump into a degree. Now, obviously, a gap year is difficult with COVID, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. We've got to make the best of what we've got. But yeah, we can still travel Australia. We can still do stuff.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And that's my sister, actually. So she's 21 this year and she wants to be a nurse. And she only just started uni this year. She did her prep course last year. But she got out. She had the same thing when she finished high school. All her friends were going to university. And she was kind of like, I don't really know if I want to be a nurse. I don't really know if I want to do something. And I said, work full time, have a few years, wait, you're 17 right now, then decide, see what you want to do. And if that's what you want to do in a few years' time after working full-time, or you want to go completely other way, don't even want to go to university, see. And I can tell she's so much happier. She took that time off. She really sat on it. She didn't rush into it. And she's actually doing that. Something she's enjoying and she loves right now. And I agree, like that program that you want to create, I think that's regardless of whether we can travel internationally or just nationally in Australia, I think it's so important to be able to have that space away from the education system, away from people telling you, whether it's your friends, your mum, your dad, telling you what to do and be like, okay, who am I out of high school? Because I'm only 17, 18 right now. Who am I and what do I actually want?
Exactly. And better to take some time now. Like you take a year off now to discover who you are, as opposed to 5 years later when you go, holy shit, this isn't what I wanted to do. Now I've already committed 5 years of my life. Do I drop out now, but then I've just wasted $50,000, or do I keep doing it? And then they'll keep doing it. And 20 years later, that's when they go, I've been working a job I didn't enjoy for so long. How did this happen? It all happened because of that split decision you made when you were 17 and you were forced to make it. Now, obviously, some people drop out, some people whatever, right? But I think we can save ourselves a lot of time by taking more time at a younger age to figure out what we want to do and really not putting as much expectations on ourselves. Because as you mentioned, with your sister and with myself, all our friends were going to university. In our head, they all have it sorted out. Yeah. The secret is none of them have it sorted out. They're probably even more stressed than you because they're now 20 grand in debt and they're second guessing if this is what they actually want to do. But also university is a lot of people use university as a bit of a tool to prolong entering the workforce or entering the adult world, because they can go to uni and just survive for another 3 years and do what they want to do. And then they enter the adult world. And it's like, that's not a good reason to be going there.
Yes. Okay. So much to unpack here. So first thing, what you mentioned, I think it's so funny because at 17, I thought, and going into 18, I was like, I need to have my life sorted by the time I'm 25. I need to know what I'm doing. I need to have a family, get married, all this thing. Like, I genuinely believed that by 24, 25, I'd be married, have kids, all this. Like, that's what I thought my life plan was. And I look back now at nearly 28 years old and I'm like, that is crazy. I have such a long time to live. I have such a long time to decide what I want to do. Yet at 17 years old, you believe that you need to have it sorted by your mid-20s, that's it. You're going to know exactly what you want to do. And did you feel like that at when you're a few years ago, that you had to have it sorted by a certain age?
I definitely had the mindset of, you know, and I still have this mindset, to be honest, like work really hard while you're young and I can reap the rewards while I'm older, which I still have that mindset, but I think you can do both. I think you can work hard and still have fun. I think with technology and with the world we're in, we have this opportunity where we can work really hard. We can leverage stuff like platforms and online tools to work hard, but then still have fun. You know, Gary Vee, whenever someone asks him, what advice would you give your younger self? He says, take some more time off, have fun in your 20s, right? Because all he did was work in his 20s. That's his advice to his younger self. Absolutely. I did think, and I still kind of have that, to be honest. I still, if I take a week off, I'm like, am I slacking? Like, it's definitely... I've spoken about this before. I have another podcast called 530 Club Podcast, which is part of the 530 Club, right? And Ori and I did an episode on, you know, what's it called? There's a book. It's like something about the hustle.
Like the four hour work week?
Well, yeah, but it's To Hell With The Hustle. There's a book and it's called To Hell With The Hustle. And we were just discussing personal development and how great it was for us, but also the toxic side of it. Mm. How you can get really engulfed in it and really wrapped up in it. And that kind of comes down to, you know, as a society, we do put a lot of pressure on young people to have it sorted out by a certain age. And like the fact that you wanted to have kids and a family, it makes no sense to me, because how can you plan that? How do you plan to meet someone, right? It also means to me that you might ignore red flags in a man because you want to get married by a certain point. And so you might see a guy and you might be dating him and you ignore red flags because you want to start dating or have kids in the future. And so I think what a big part of it comes down to, and I only recently heard about this, there's a book called like Surrender, or like How to Surrender. And he basically talks about just surrendering yourself. And I'm such a fan of that. Like, don't put all this pressure, just surrender to life and see where it takes you. Don't have all these expectations. Don't have dates when you want to be married and when you want to have kids and when you want to be a millionaire or whatever. Just surrender and just enjoy it. Enjoy the process.
I agree. And I think over the past couple of years, I've really adopted that, because I think for the most part, I'm like, you want to have a sense of control of your life, right? You do want to have a sense of control. You want to know, okay, what's going to happen? But you're so right. How can you plan when you're going to meet someone you're going to marry, or who you're going to have kids with, or, you know, the moment that you're going to become a millionaire? You can't. All you can really do, and this is what I believe in, is having that messy inspired action towards those goals, putting in the work behind what you want. And like you said, surrendering. And I think in this day and age, surrendering is so powerful, but it's also so difficult because we are taught and we're conditioned in the society we live in, go, 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 right? If the moment you take a break, and I know this is something I'm dealing with as an entrepreneur, is not to feel that shame, not to feel that guilt that you can't take a break and that you can't stop and you can't relax, right? And I think it's probably a limiting belief picked up from, you know, being younger and parents and other people around you, but thinking that you have to work so hard to get money, so hard to achieve anything. And yes, you do have to work hard to a degree to get to what you want, but I don't think it should be the mentality that you work yourself into the ground.
Mm. Well, it's actually, there's an interesting thing that happened in Silicon Valley. There's a guy who was doing like a startup in Silicon Valley, and I think it would cost them $40,000 to train up someone, right? Which is actually quite standard to take on a new employee and train them up to when they're actually fully productive, $40,000, right? And so what he realized was, because they had such a churn and burn rate, like push them really hard, Silicon Valley style, people would leave after like a year and a half to 2 years on average. And so what he realized is, what if we actually made our environment, you know, more enjoyable? We put them through less hours and stuff. They'll actually stay longer. And that saves us money because we don't have to train up new people. And so by staying for an extra 2.5 years or to 3 years, they're actually saving way more money because they're not having to recruit and recruit and recruit. And so it's like, there's actually a benefit into not having that toxic work, 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 work.
I agree with that. And I actually read something the other day, read a few studies over the years actually, but it only popped up again, that there's a big thing where companies want to start to, and I think it's been a realization since COVID and a lot more people have been working from home, obviously, but the flexibility that if you are still going to the office job, to not work this standard 8-hour day. What do you believe of the 8-hour day?
Yeah, this is great. I've spoken about this quite a bit. I mean, this links into 4-hour work week, right? Mm. Which, by the way, was written in 2005.
Like, yeah.
So ahead of its time.
Yeah.
Well, look, I think the way we're moving towards is more of a freelance contractor model. Mm. So if you look like an average job, obviously not every job, but let's say there's like an average office job. Do they need 40 hours? I think the average person could get their job done in 20 hours. But because they have 40 hours, Parkinson's law.
Yes, I was going to say Parkinson's law.
We would take whatever time we have and we'll fill it. And so we have 40 hours, we would take 40 hours to do that. Now, I think we can move into more of a specialized contractor model where, as opposed to working for one company, maybe you focus on your one thing you're good at. And let's say most companies only need you for 10 hours a week. So instead of working for one company, you work for four companies and do 10 hours for each company, and that's your 40-hour work week. And that way you charge a premium and there's no wasted hours, and you can, and then you're flexible. Maybe you only want to work 30 hours or a 20-hour week. Now, the caveat to that, and this is what people need to understand with contracting and freelance models, are, yes, you can make way more money, but you don't have super, you don't have sick days, you don't have holiday days, you don't have security. So that's what you're sacrificing. So you need to be smart with your money. So if you're going to go into the contractor model, you need to be putting aside money into different accounts, separating it and making sure that you do have money for a rainy day or for when you're sick and stuff, which is something I've kind of had to realize as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
So I do think that's more of the world we're heading into. Gen Z hate the idea of a 9-to-5, I think. It doesn't have to be a 9-to-5. Like, we're not talking bad about 9-to-5. It's more just the model's quite outdated.
Yeah, no, that's what I think. And I have had people kind of, you know, I've spoken about the 9-to-5, but it's the model. And I have had people be like, oh, you know, what do you have against 9-to-5 just because it's not for you? And I was like, no, it's not that. It's just the model of this 40-hour work week and smashing it out. But I do agree. But on the other hand, I think, you know, if people were to go into this kind of contracting, freelancing type of work, you have to have a certain type of mindset. Because like you said, there are so many benefits to it, but there's also drawbacks. There's not that security. There's, you know, not super, all of that stuff. And I think as much as a lot of people are like, yes, I would just love to work from home and do this, have my own hours, I genuinely believe it's not for everyone. I don't think everyone can adopt that mindset.
It's definitely not for everyone. It's so tough. Like, whenever people, I think the way entrepreneurship has been so idolized is quite dangerous because everyone wants to be an entrepreneur because it looks quite easy. 95% of entrepreneurs fail. You know, the math is against you. Look, I love it and I love the game of it, but there are definitely times in my life where I'm like, man, I would just love to have a job.
Yeah.
I don't think people realize how much money you can make in a job. Like $100,000 a year is so much money. I pay myself like the bare minimum, like 25 to 30 grand a year. And even then I put a lot of that back in. And obviously I would love to earn more money in the future. Like I feel like, you know, you plant the seed now.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. But you've got to make sacrifices for that sort of stuff. And a lot of people aren't willing to do that. And so while I agree 9-to-5 is outdated, I do think it suits most people. That sort of, I just think the model could be refreshed up. Like it should be more KPI driven, like as opposed to just hours, work 40 hours a week. Well, what if you get all your stuff done? Then go home and chill.
Yeah, like, exactly.
You've done what you've had to do. You've done everything I asked.
Yeah, I agree. And what you said on, you know, the whole concept of entrepreneurism being idolized, it's so true. I don't, you know, I even get comments like, oh, you've lived such an easy life. You work from home, go out to coffee whenever. And I'm like, you have to practice discipline. That I have failed in my first year of business more than I have had wins. And people don't understand this, and people don't understand that. And like you said, like normalize the fact that there are moments where I'm like, you know, maybe it would be easier to get another job. Maybe it'd be easier to give up. But as we're saying, it comes with a certain mindset. It comes with that drive and having the passion. I really believe that you have to be passionate about what you're doing, not just for the sake of, oh, this is an easy way to make money. And I actually remember this because a few months ago, probably longer than that now, I met a guy. He was doing e-commerce. He was making really good money in the month, smashing it out, and he just was not fulfilled. He's like, I'm really unhappy. I'm making money. I have money in my bank account. I can basically do whatever. I work like an hour a day. But he's like, I feel like I have no purpose. I feel like I'm not driving towards anything. And I thought that was so interesting because I really hate the concept where people believe money can buy them happiness. Money's great, but money is just more opportunities. It's not something to drive you towards a state of happiness. And when I had a conversation with this guy, he was just like, it just doesn't feel fulfilled not having a bigger purpose behind just getting sales come in. And I thought that was so interesting.
Oh, 100%. Like money for me is a tool to reinvest in my business where I can have more impact and more reach. And I think I say $75,000 in Sydney is like the point. Anything above 75K is kind of just extra and you don't actually need it. It's fleeting, right? So you get to that point where you're very comfortable and anything over 75K is kind of just like unnecessary and it's very diminishing.
Yeah.
And that was really cool. I was like, okay, interesting. Obviously it depends on which country and what city you're in. But yeah, I mean, as even your point of failure, like starting business, like they say, you know, the master has failed more times than the student has tried. Failure, everyone has failed. Anyone successful that you look up to has failed and failed and failed and failed. I failed a lot as well. The podcast is kind of the first thing I've actually stuck with and been successful at. Everything else before that, I failed. And the best part is the best time to fail is when you're young and you've got no responsibilities, which is why I was such a big advocate of promoting that on my show. Cause it's like, if you fail when you're 17, you don't have kids, you're probably still at home. Like the consequences are very low versus when you're 35 and you've got two children and, you know, a wife or a husband or a partner or whatever. And, you know, they're relying on your income or you're relying on their income or whatever it is. The kids are relying on you putting food on the table. There's way more pressure.
Do you think though, if you got to say 35, you're married, you have two kids, you have a house, and you didn't really do a lot in your 20s for what you really wanted to do, and you just feel like I have this burning desire to, you know, start this business or change my career, do you think it's important though to still live that out, even though the drawbacks of that is, yes, you have a wife, husband, you have kids now, you have a house? Do you think it's still important to, I guess, hold yourself accountable for how you want to live life?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I think I reference this quote a lot, and it was the top regret of the dying. So a woman in Australia actually interviewed a bunch of people in their deathbed, and this was the top regret, was I wish I would have lived a life more true to myself rather than live a life that others expected of me. And so a lot of people are living a life that others expect of them. They're living a life that looks good on the surface, but really they're not that happy. And so yeah, even if you do have kids at the time, it's like, well, maybe it means you've just got to sell your car and get a cheaper car, or maybe it means you've got to downgrade your home or something. But fact is, kids, man, when you're a kid, you don't care what home you're in.
Yeah.
That's all the time.
Like, yeah.
That's just, kids don't care. Kids don't care what car you have, if it's a Mercedes or a Toyota. Like, they couldn't.
I agree. Yes.
They don't really care. They'll be happy with whatever, right? I know I definitely was when I was younger. I didn't care about any of that stuff. So, yeah, I still think you should definitely try that, because otherwise you're going to be 50 and regretting, or 60 and regretting. 35 is still pretty young, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. And I think I didn't really realize this concept of, I think it's always been in the back of my mind, but it was until I moved to Bali a couple of years ago and I stayed there for just under a year. And I think that when I was making the decision, I went for the first 2 months and I did my visa run and I came back home, and the logical, I guess, side of me was like, all right, why don't you just PT a bit more, save a bit more money, and then go back and move to Bali. And I was having this dilemma inside of me, and I'm like, or I could go there now, start my business that I've wanted to, get out of PT, and yeah, I may fail, but at least I've tried it. And I kept going back and forth, and I thought, you know what? I don't want to get to 30, 35, 40 and be like, why didn't you just try that out? Why didn't you give it a go? And I remember my dad saying to me, he just goes, so what happens? You go there, you start your business, and you fail. And I was like, I don't know what. And he goes, come home, you know, PT again. That's the worst that could happen. And I'm like, so true. And having that mentality has really stuck with me. And I think what I see with the clients I work with and people like I network with and connect with and friends, the majority have this huge fear of failure, and sometimes even a fear of succeeding, because it's getting out of an identity they knew. And it's one thing that I'm such a big advocate for now is, even if you think you were going to fail, you don't know until you've done it and you've failed.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, failure, well, we say there is no winning or losing, only winning or learning.
Right? Yes.
Failure is an opportunity to learn. And I know that's kind of cheesy, and it's just like...
It's true, though.
It's true, though. Yeah, it is true. And like, on what you just said, like with your sister even, like, you could always go back to Bali. Your sister, university is always going to be there. University is safe and secure. And once you're 21, you're a mature age student, which means you can kind of get into most degrees if you just work a little bit hard and figure out a way in. I know people who got a 50 ATAR and they're studying medicine.
Yeah.
Like, I know heaps of those stories, and people will be like, oh, but you need to get a high ATAR if you want to do medicine. Yes, but also no. Like, it's not the only way. And so, yes, university is always going to be there. However, taking a gap year won't always be there, because
yeah,
you'll be in a full-time job. Oh, I can't quit my job. I can't go on a gap year. I've got a job. So I just think the chapter I wrote in my book, which is coming out, the key message is using your youth to explore your passions. Like, just use your youth to explore and taste as many things as you can. And that's a message I like to put out to younger people that are, you know, listening to the show.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it is hard when you're younger and you're growing up. And I think for me, you know, it's come with emotional maturity as well. But if it's anything that anyone takes away from what we're saying now, I think don't be afraid to fail, because you're right. You learn from failure. And I think it's the best thing. Like, I love failure, because I'm like, fuck yeah, I know that's not going to work for me now. I'm going to go the other way. And that's good. There's 50-50 chance, right? So the other way is going to work for me. And I think a lot of the time, and people that I work with as well, and what I see is they, which I want to kind of touch on, people sit in a victim mentality. People sit in an identity that they can't change, or something has happened to them. And I had a very heated discussion a few months ago, and someone who didn't know me, they knew me off social media. They don't know anything to do with my past life. And they kind of made a comment, and they were like, you know, I watched one of your Instagram stories, I listened to your podcast, and I don't really agree on the concept that you can just change if you want to, which I believe that you can. And they made a comment. They're like, you can tell that you've never been through anything in your 20s. And I said, my mum died when I was 18. I was like, that's a traumatic event. And I was like, I've been through a lot. And I said, I could have either sat for my whole 20s in a victim mentality and be like, I don't have a mum, I'm going to be sad, I'm not going to use this to my advantage, I'm not going to learn, I'm not going to grow from this. Or I could do what I'm doing now and learn from that, heal from that, and move forward. So what are your thoughts about people who sit in victim mentality and changing?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And I'm sorry to hear that about your mom. Like, that's, You know, that's super sad. And you're right, you could have just played victim. And the thing is, there is no benefit to playing the victim.
Yeah.
What benefit is there? So it's like, even if you think you don't believe in the term, it's like, well, you can either play victim and have no benefit, or you can have more of a growth mindset and a positive mindset and see what can I learn from this? How can I turn this around? Now, obviously, your mother dying is one of the most extreme examples, but you know, you can still turn this around, and it's like, I can start my business off this. I can use whatever I don't know. There's lots of different examples. We call it the slingshot method. Like when I was a kid, my house burnt down. There's a whole story around that, but it's like, yeah, I could look at that and say, oh, I was so unlucky. I lost, you know, we lost a lot of stuff. We lost a lot of photos. There's not many photos of me as a child anymore. That sort of stuff. But that was the reason we moved to Australia, and all of this stuff has happened because of Australia. I even go to the point where it's like, you know, when I tell the story, you know, when our house burnt down, actually burnt down the day before Christmas. And so it was just like, everyone could, and that's the same reaction you just had there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the same reaction everyone has. But then I go, but what's the one day a year, or the one time in a year you guarantee we won't be in our home because we're with family?
Yeah.
So it's the best time it could have happened because we weren't in the house when it burnt down. And like, who cares about objects when your family?
But I love that. I love that. And I just want to touch on this. And I think it's important to be able to neutralize something that is perceived as negative. You've been able to be like, okay, yeah, there's so many drawbacks. My house is burnt down, but what are the benefits to this? And it's hard for people who sit in a fixed mindset to be like, how could you possibly say there's benefits of your house burning down? But you've recognized one yourself, you know, the one time that we're not in that house. This is a perfect time. That's, you know, if it was to happen, wouldn't you want it to be then, right?
Yeah, and the thing is, right, look, obviously at the time of it happening, that's not the mentality I had, but just looking back on it and I go, okay, well, you know, look at, that was actually, you know, amazing. Obviously, if we could have avoided having a house burnt down in general.
Yeah, exactly.
But it happened, right? And yeah. That's life. Life has obstacles.
Mm.
So yeah, I think having a victim mindset is one of the worst things you can really have. I think majority of people have a victim mindset, and it's just so draining and exhausting when you're surrounded by those people. And the opposite, when you're with people who have a positive mindset, a growth mindset, they're just better people, whatever it is, whatever you want to call it, it'll lift you up so much. Like, that's been a game changer for me, surrounding myself with more of those type of people. It's lifted all aspects of my life up.
Are you still friends with a lot of people from high school, or have you found now with what you're doing, you've transitioned? Because I know you have quite a big network. Have you transitioned to changing the people you surround yourself with?
Yeah. I mean, I still have friends. So actually Wednesday night, I meet up with my high school friends and we play Dungeons & Dragons, which is like a board game.
Nice.
That's pretty much the only times I see them though.
Yeah.
Otherwise, yeah, we don't talk too much. And look, they're great guys, but we just have different priorities in life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love that. I love the fact I can see them once a week, which is awesome. But I guess the friends that I'm probably closer with and talk to more regularly, I have met outside of high school. They're older than me. They might be younger than me. I've met them through a podcast, through 530 Club, through various events. And yeah, they're the ones that have really actually helped propel the business because we work together, we workshop ideas. Whereas my other mates, you know, they're great guys to hang out with and I love seeing them, but they're in a different world compared to what, I guess, what I'm doing. So because I hear people say you got to cut out your negative friends or something. And for me, it's like, well, first of all, those guys aren't negative. They're in a different space. It's like, well, I'm just going to, you know, understand you have different friend groups for different reasons. And it's totally fine. Not all your friend groups have to be your best friends and you're talking to all the time. It's totally okay that you have a friend group for this and a friend group for going to the gym together.
Yes.
For whatever it is.
Right? Let's normalize that. I completely agree because, yeah, people so often say, cut out these people. Yes, if they're toxic and they're bringing you down constantly, but you're right. You know, I have the same. I have different friend groups and, you know, I have my high school friend group too. I barely see them, you know, once a month, if that. It doesn't mean I don't love them. It doesn't mean I don't care about them. We are just on completely different life paths. And is it great that the moments that we do meet up? Yes, it's so great to catch up and see what's everyone on. But I recognize that they just do not fit my lifestyle in a consistent manner, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And look, all those guys I mentioned, they have their other friend groups as well. They've all got different stuff. Like, and so for that's, and look, once again, if they are actually toxic and you can identify that, then yes, get rid of them. But in my situation, they're not toxic. They're great guys. And I didn't want to get rid of them, but I couldn't have them as my only friend group because they weren't in a part of the business. We had different directions. And so now I've got lots of different friend groups and it's, you know, super beneficial and it's really great. I love it. And that only happened over the past kind of 8 months or so. Been massive change. 530 Club was a big big changing factor for that.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on that. So speak about the 5:30 Club, because I've seen you post about it and I love the concept.
So basically, I got introduced to it by a friend of mine. He's like, because I was saying, I just don't have any friends my own age or like doing this sort of stuff. He's like, you should go to 5:30 Club. Lots of young people, really cool. And I was like, I can't go to Wollongong, like it's too far. And he's like, there's one in Cronulla, which is near where I live. And
yeah.
I was like, sweet. And so the next day I like woke up early and I went and I was like, I had no idea what I was going into. And it was good, met some cool people. And then I just kind of kept going. And then we had a big meetup, which we've got another one coming up soon, where we do like all the clubs have a big meetup in Sydney. And like we get to actually chat and stuff. And so that's where I met some really cool people. And like everyone you meet at these meetups are awesome. Like they've all got a side hustle, they've all got businesses, or they're working on projects, or they're trying to help people. And whatever it is, they're really cool. And yeah, I've just been in love with it ever since. It's been a great way to meet people, start my day early. I could never start early consistently, but now I can because of this framework. It's basically you just meet at the cafe at 5:30 every morning, Monday to Friday. You do 1 hour power hour, which is whatever you want to do. You can read a book, you can write, you can journal, you can work on answer emails, whatever, it's totally up to you. And then so we do that 1 hour power hour, and then we might chat for a little bit and then start your day. And yeah,
it's amazing. I love that. I need to start one in Perth.
So there's the girl who ran Perth, I'm interviewing her right after this, we're getting lunch together. She's in
Sydney. Oh amazing. Oh my god, I might have to check it out. It's funny because I find in Perth there's entrepreneurs, there's people with their own businesses, but what I found when I was in Sydney, it seems easier to network and connect with people here. And I found a couple of guys, they have like a teeth whitening e-commerce business, and I don't know how I came across them, but I was like, oh, they're in Perth, oh my god, more entrepreneurs. And I just sent them a DM and I was like, hey, do you guys want to go for coffee next week? So we're going for coffee tomorrow. And I love it, because I'm like, there's not that many people who get together and just speak and you can vibe with, because most of my friends, I think actually all of my friends have, you know, the full-time 9-to-5 job. It's fine, but like you've realized, it's so nice to be around people who have that entrepreneurial mindset, that business mindset, personal development, you know, who are into it, and to be able to speak about it.
Absolutely. And like, so I didn't start 5:30 Club. I'm part of the team because I'm just in love with it and I'm helping grow it as much as I can. But Ori, who is one of the co-founders who started it a while back, he's like my best mate now. And so every morning, like we'll do our power hour at 5:30. We then go to F45 gym. We did that this morning. And Monday mornings, we then have breakfast together and we book a meeting room and we have our books, our planners. We have the same planner and we plan out our week and review our week from last week. And we go through that together. And so for the first 3 hours of my morning is with him almost, you know, every morning, or the first 2 hours at least. And it's just, yeah, it's just amazing. Like I value that friendship so highly because he works in the same space as me. And look, he still is a 9-to-5. The beautiful thing about the 5:30 Club is it doesn't affect your 9-to-5.
Yeah.
9-to-5 and 5:30 is like 4 hours before 9 o'clock. You can get up, you can do an hour of work, you can go gym, then you can do another hour of work, and then you can do another hour of work.
Literally. Yep.
And then you can start your 9-to-5. Which is what a lot of people do. They start businesses in 5:30 Club. They use that time to actually create businesses.
That's great. And I think this is important to note, because I've heard a lot of people say to me, I can't possibly start a business. I don't have time. I don't have time. I cannot stand when people tell me they do not have time. There is time.
We all have the same amount of time. Yes. Right? Unless you're Elon Musk or
in
the world who actually do not have time. It comes down to your priorities. And so I will never say I don't have time. It is more, I don't, you know, I'm not, it's not high enough priority.
Yes, I've started saying that too.
Yeah, and that's what I hear. And this is where, like, say you ask someone out for a date or something. And so I don't, are you going to hang out next week? Oh, I'm pretty busy next week. It's like, come on.
Yeah, come on.
Let's grab a coffee or a drink. Do you not have 2 hours or three hours in your week? It's like, to me, when I say that, all I hear is I'm not a high enough priority. Maybe that's a toxic mindset to have. I don't know. But
I think it's just, it's kind of you're understanding your worth. You're understanding the time and energy that you can give someone else. And I do believe that, you know, whether it's a dating situation or friendship situation, if they're not making an effort and you're not making an equal effort, then it is saying you're not a priority to this and my lifestyle and what I want to do. And I agree with that. And I think the dating example is perfect, you know, and having people that say, for example, are seeking out dates, whatever, and then they keep making excuses or blowing you off. And it's like, okay, well, what's the point in this then, you know?
Yeah, and you have to, because I've had heaps of people bail last minute for dates, you know, over the years or whatever, and it's super annoying. And I know at the point where it's like, you know your worth sort of thing. Once you know your value or whatever, you can really not be as hurt and just, I don't know how to word this, but it's kind of just what you're saying before. And I take a lot of my learnings from the business world into my personal life as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So like when someone bails last minute, I find it so disrespectful because it's like, what am I going to do tonight?
Yes.
I plan that. It's like in the business world, that doesn't happen because it's like, you know, that's the business world.
And and I think it's that mindset, but I agree. People who disrespect my time, that's something I don't tolerate anymore. And I think that comes with being able to set boundaries and be firm within your boundaries, whether it's dating or whether it's with my friends, respect my time, respect my time frame. And I think people who don't respect that and don't give you that are people in their own life who don't know how to manage their time.
Yeah. And like even you, for example, like I didn't, it was like 9:59 and I hadn't heard anything from you. I was like, oh, has she forgotten about the podcast? And then obviously you sent me a link at like 10 o'clock on the dot, which is great. But I've kind of set up my mic here. I've blocked that time out of my day. I was like, man, if she doesn't rock up, this is really inconvenient and very annoying. And
yeah.
I lost a lot of respect for you.
Yeah.
That's not, you know, me trying to be rude or anything.
No, but I would expect you to be like, because I'm the same. I've had people who have booked a call, even clients, people I haven't worked with and want to book a sales call, they don't rock up. Mm. And I'm like, I have blocked out 60 to 90 minutes of my day. And those people, I've had actually that instance where it's happened with one lady 3 times. She just kept rebooking, not showing up. And I ended up, to me, not signing her as a client, it's just not worth the money. And I sent her an email and I was like, you can't respect my time. How, as a client, are we going to work together? And that, you know, I think that, again, that comes with understanding your boundaries and emotionally maturing, because probably ask me 5 years ago, I would have been so nervous, you know, I would have been in that lack mindset, like, oh, I need that client, you know, whatever you want to do. But now I'm like, You were literally signifying to me that you can't manage your time. How in the hell are we going to get on client calls every single week? But it's true, you know, it is a big one. And I'd expect the same, you know, if I'd rocked up here and you don't say anything. And I've had that before in a podcast interview where someone's texted me 30 minutes after the time and been like, so sorry, running late. And I'm like, no, this isn't happening now. Like, we've blocked out a time, we've discussed it, it's in our calendars, and yeah, it just frustrates me.
Yeah, and it's such a bad first impression, right? And so, like, for me, I get people messaging me, like, I get quite a few people a week messaging me, asking to, like, jump on Zoom or something, and I often do it. I normally jump on Zoom with any of my listeners just for 15, 20 minutes, and very rarely does it happen because they really want to talk to me. And they reach out to me.
Mm.
But when someone reaches out to me and it's like, hey, I'm a big fan of the show, I'd love to have a chat with you, could you help me out with some stuff? And I'll say yes. And then I jump on a call and they're not there. It's like, oh my gosh. Like, and especially if they don't even give you a heads up and they just don't rock up.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. Like, it's still annoying if, you know, you get to the time and it's like, or you get some notice. But if you get to the time and then there's nothing, it's just crickets. I'm like, I feel, because I've just never been like that. I've never disrespected someone's time like that. It just blows my mind. I'm like, how?
And I find, I guess, the dating world or the personal world and the business world are very different. Mm. Like, people don't care about time so much more in the dating world. I've had people rock up 40 minutes late to dates and that sort of stuff. And they kind of don't even apologize. They're just like, sorry, I'm late. It's like 40 minutes.
Yes.
If that was a meeting, you'd be gone. Like, if this
agreed. World,
I wouldn't have stayed or whatever. And we've gone a bit of a tangent here about being late.
Being late. But it's true, though. It's a big one. And I think people need to realize, respect people's time. You know, respect people's time. Respect the time and energy that they're giving you. But I want to transition this. Dating life. Are you dating at the moment? Have anyone special in your life?
I'm single right now. I'm kind of seeing someone just casually, just I guess we're dating.
Yeah.
I guess we're dating, but we're not boyfriend or girlfriend
anymore. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I find it very distracting, that world. And so like online dating apps, I hate them, but also, you know, necessary evil.
It's so true. That's why I brought it up, because I'm like, how do you find it? being business-minded entrepreneur, because I agree. I'm single as well, but I find it very distracting. Very distracting.
I kind of joke like my perfect girl doesn't exist yet because I guess, you know, typically, not always, obviously, but typically girls like to date guys that are older than them, even if it's a year or two. And I'm 22, which kind of gives me 18, 19, 20, 21.
So yeah, yeah.
Girls at that age, like my dream girl would be more entrepreneurial. Mm. Or like that's the most attractive thing, would like, what's her passions? What is she doing with her life? That's the most attractive thing to me. And it's actually interesting. I just find there's far less girls in the entrepreneurial space. I don't know if you've experienced that, younger women specifically. Mm. And that's really a space I want to tackle and try help. And I'm not sure if I'm not sure if guys just kind of just do it and girls overthink a little bit, or if maybe it's, you know, there is a bit of misogyny in the world and they struggle to get into it. I'm sure there's a lot of different factors. But I find girls don't get into the entrepreneurial space until 23, 24, and then they start getting into it. It's very rare you'll meet like a 19 or 18 year old girl who's like,
I agree.
Stuff. That's why when I meet them, I'm like, I need to.
Let's stay in touch, please.
Yeah, and I know a bunch now, which is really cool. Mm. But yeah, what was the dating question? Yeah.
Yeah, the dating question. Did you meet this person on a dating app or out?
Yeah, I did actually. Yeah. The only good one, Hinge, in my opinion.
I agree. I actually just recorded a podcast episode 2 weeks ago now, and I spoke about dating apps because I had a question box on my Instagram and I kept getting questions about it. And I was like, I may as well just do a potty on it. And I was saying this, I was like, I reckon Tinder is just really if you want to bang, Bumble's in between and Hinge is the best. And then I had my friend say, but Hinge is so much effort. And I was like, if you were looking to actively date someone.
Isn't that a funny comment?
Yeah. And I'm like.
Much effort. It's like, yeah.
It is. Good. That's exactly what I said. I was like, if you're looking to actively date someone and find something, you know, that is going to align with you more, don't you want to put in effort? And they're like, nah, like it's just so much easier on Tinder and Bumble. And I was like, yeah, but it's not high quality there.
It was difficult to put in a lot of effort if you're talking to 10 people at once. It's like you can't put in max amount of effort if you've got all these messages, right? The dating app is so interesting. Like, I agree, Tinder is just a shit show. Like,
yeah.
It's a nightmare. Bumble just doesn't work for me. I wish.
Oh, how come? How come?
I don't know.
I used to like Bumble, yeah.
I get way less matches. Girls either message you a relatively dry. They're three things. They message you like, hey, and you're like, okay, great.
Yeah.
They don't message you. Or they message you a good opener and then you respond and they don't really respond again. Or I've never had a conversation go past like, you know, a week.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I think maybe. Yeah. You're like, it's the same across everything.
Yeah.
I think maybe Bumble, I don't know, because obviously the lady has to message first, right? Mm. On Bumble. See, I'm different. I'm just like, I don't care what app we're on. Like, I'll message you first if I want to. But that's my mindset. And I think getting older, maybe ask me when I was like 23, I was like too nervous. I'm like, no, I'm not messaging in the mail. You know, that whole mentality. So maybe it's an age thing. But I was speaking to someone the other day because I matched with this guy, had a conversation, and he goes, oh, what do you do? And I like explained a little bit. And it's kind of hard to explain what I do to like a completely new person. And if they're not an entrepreneur.
Me.
Yes.
I always have this thing where it's like, I always feel like it gets so much about me because I'll be like, oh, yeah, I'm studying uni or something. I'll be like, cool.
Yeah.
I'll be like, I have a podcast. Yeah. What's that about?
Yeah.
It's about practical life skills. Oh my God. I need to put a TikTok follow up. And suddenly I'm like, I like talking about myself, but I
was it's so true because when they ask and I'm like, oh, I knew this question was coming and it's like, okay, what do I say? But it's true because sometimes you feel like you're going on this tangent, but they keep asking and I'm like, I want to talk about you too. Mm. But I remember this guy asked and I just give like a short rundown while we're messaging. And I was like, oh, what do you do? His response, I manage a pub, full stop, nothing. And I'm like, do you speak to anyone on these apps? Like, how is a conversation meant to flow?
Oh, cool. How long have you been doing that for? And then it's like a boring conversation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dating apps are, as I mentioned, they're a necessary evil. Well, yeah. They're not really necessary, but in COVID, they kind of were.
In COVID, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, it's funny. This girl I've kind of been dating, I didn't give her my Instagram before we met up. Mm. I normally always, that's like my number one goal. It's like get them onto Instagram or something where you can, and it's great for catfishing because you can't really fake an Instagram. So it's just like, it's just safer in general, I think.
That's why I get them on Instagram.
Yeah. But the problem is I have my entire you can go on my Instagram, you can then see my IG reels, you can then click on my podcast, you can then click on my TikTok and see every opinion I have about all these different things. And suddenly they know so much more about me than I do about them. And I don't really like
that.
Yes.
This is something actually I've been thinking about the past few months, because it's true. People, I normally will give it, just because, as you said, it's easier with the whole catfish thing, right? And it happens so frequently. But I've had guys message me, like, I'll give the Instagram, they'll be like, oh, I just watched one of your IGTV, watch your reels, your stories, you like this, this, this. And I'm like, we haven't even gone on a first date and you know more about me than you would on probably a first date. Do you think that's a problem?
I mean, I don't think it's a problem for too many people. For, like, people like us, it could be a bit of one. For me, if this comes off egotistical, I'm sorry, but like I've had multiple people say I'm intimidating because I know what I want to do with my life. And I'm like, oh,
I've heard that.
Okay. That's a good thing.
Yeah. You're like, I kind of feel like I'm getting my life sorted out. Like, yeah.
And look, I don't know exactly what I want to do in my life, but I do have a bit of a vision.
Yeah. And
so yeah, I mean, it's a weird one, having content out there. You put yourself out there for everyone to see, you know, especially with what I talk about in the podcast clips and stuff. All it could take is they click on my TikTok and see one clip taken out of context and they disagree with it and they might be turned off me. And it's like, I'd rather just win you over in person and get to know you.
Yeah.
Then you can go listen to my show or whatever you
want. Yeah, and then go stalk me on TikTok. Yeah, no, I agree. And I think I've had that too, the intimidating thing. Like, I've had a guy be like, oh my God, you on your Instagram, like, it's so intimidating. Like, I've had someone go, wow, a female entrepreneur. And I'm like...
What? Oh, that's a red flag, man. That's a red flag.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Wow, she owns her own business? That's crazy. But even like my niche is females, right? And I think this is what men forget when they stalk my profile or they watch my stories, right? Everything that I do, it can be taken for male and female, but obviously I am projecting it to the females. And I think they forget that when they're watching my stories, or they'll make a comment and be like, oh, you post so many stories in a day. Don't watch then. Put me on mute. Like, it's not, this content isn't for you. So I think it's true what you said. It can be a bit hard when you do kind of the things that we do and people aren't used to that and they can be confronted by that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think it is why I've kind of, split test. I do a little split testing in my life. It's like I'll send this girl my Instagram or this girl I won't and see what happens and stuff.
Yeah.
And see what the response is like. I've had people who've listened to my show and I didn't even know, and I've gone on a date with them or something. And I was just saying that it's kind of like a weird dynamic. And,
yeah, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
Do they like bring it up in conversation halfway through? They're like, oh, I followed you from the start.
No, not from the start or anything.
Yeah.
No, it does feel, it's a weird dynamic. Like, I wouldn't probably date. Actually, it's funny. My mate is dating a girl who came through my podcast. Yeah.
You're like the networker for everyone to date someone.
She listened to the show, then she DM'd me and she was just like, hey, Byron, super inspired from your podcast. I'm studying engineering and I want to drop out and start a business. And I was just like, hey, thanks so much. I should actually introduce you to my friend Scott. He actually dropped out of engineering. No, he's an engineer and he started a business. So they had a chat. And then Scott said, you should meet my friend Joe. And then so she DM'd, she followed Joe. And then my mate like DM'd her, not knowing she came from the podcast. And now they're dating.
That's amazing. Full circle. I love that. I think, yeah. I might try the split testing thing. That's a good little tip. I might start to do that.
If this is like a female audience, I would totally say just message the guy. I know it's scary, but like it's such a power move. And it's like I find it attractive because of confidence, right? And it's just it's a pattern break. Marketing, you know, marketing strategy is, you know, pattern interrupt. Most girls will never message a guy. Therefore, if you do it, it's a pattern interrupt and you're sticking out.
Yes, ladies, listen to this. I agree because
ever say hey.
Yeah. No,
I've never said hey. I always say something specific about, I don't know.
Yeah, what do you say? What's your opener line?
Whatever it is. If you have something in your bio, it's easier to write something to. Otherwise, you just want to make it easy to respond. I don't know. I hate the way as men we're so, our value is so little on dating apps because girls get so many matches. Like, holy crap! Like a girl that's less attractive than a, like, say, I don't like using ratings, but let's say you're like a
9 out of 10
guy and a 6 out of 10 girl. I genuinely believe the 6 out of 10 girl
gets the female always. Yeah.
And so it's just, it does make you feel quite insignificant. When you see these, some of my friends' profiles, I'm like, oh my God, I'm just one of literally a thousand matches.
I think this is kind of humbling. I think I forget that. And I think that like males, I don't like to use the word struggle. I don't think it's a struggle. You still get matches, but it's so true. And hating to use a rating, but I think females just have it so much more easier. So much more easier.
They do to get matches, but it doesn't mean dating someone is easier.
Yes. Yes. Right. Agree.
The first step is easier. Yeah. Dating someone is still hard, right? And look, you might have overwhelm of choices because you've got all these matches. I also think it means a lot of girls will use Tinder as an ego boost to make themselves feel better. Just like,
oh yeah. The validation.
Like, guys don't do that because we don't get matches. Like you have to support. It's a grind. Tinder and Bumble.
You're like, this is my other hustle job on the side.
It's a grind for guys, unless you're like really good looking or something, or have something that means you get lots of matches. But most of my friends don't use it because they're like, it's horrible, it makes me feel insignificant. Mm. Whereas girls, it's like the opposite, it makes them feel significant.
Yeah, it's really true. But I have this discussion with my female friends all the time. I feel like, I mean, I haven't seen your profile, but guys don't know how to choose a good photo to put on their dating apps. Some of the photos I see, come on.
So usually guys will look better in real life than the photos.
Yeah.
Girls are really good at taking photos, and it's the opposite.
Yes.
I have pretty good photos just because I'm a photographer and my best friend's a photographer.
True. Then it's the expectation. You need to have good photos.
Even with good photos, I struggle to get matches. Not struggle, but it's like, I'll have to swipe 20 times to get one. Whereas girls will swipe like literally every swipe is a match. And so, yeah, it's just, you could almost do like a whole study on this. I think it's super fascinating.
I think it's fascinating as well. And I think when I recorded the episode, I was just trying to break down the stigma too, as well as you're like, yeah, it's a necessary evil. I think that there should not be a stigma around if you want to use dating apps and if that's how you want to meet someone. And especially, like you said, during COVID, like...
Yeah, I don't think I don't see that stigma too much. Maybe that's my that's more normalized for my age group. Even I'm not sure how old you are, but I don't think you're that much older.
Nearly 28. So
okay, yeah, even a 5-year gap is difference for the Tinder and that normal. It's so normalized for us. It's so normal, like everyone. You wouldn't bat an eye if someone's using it. Like,
I think with my age, maybe a slightly more older, there was this whole period of years where there was no such thing as dating apps, right? You didn't know what they were. And so going out, I do generally prefer to meet someone organically. Like I love that. But I think because we've kind of transitioned with the mindset, like, okay, let's meet someone organically. And then all of a sudden came Tinder as the first one. It was like, wow, this is so much more easier. And so I think only in my age range, it's starting to become a little bit more normalized to get on that and meet people. But yeah, I think, you know, your generation, you guys have known it since.
It was in high school for me. It was actually Tinder.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
When they launched Tinder, it was 16 was the age limit. So like we had it.
Really?
It's now 18 and it's been 18 for years. But like my best mate, they actually broke up recently. They dated for like 4 years. They met in high school on Tinder.
That is crazy.
Yeah, and so it's very normal. It's also dangerous because I think a lot of guys and girls, but like struggle to approach or even say hello to someone in real life because I'm so good at opening on text. Like I've done that 1,000 times, right? But like I've very rarely cold approached someone at a bar or said hello or something, trying to like flirt with them because it's just not normal.
That's so interesting. I love. Yeah, the different dynamic between the two generations, Gen Z, millennials, I think for me, I don't know, mate, but I think it's a personality thing as well. I think going to approach someone like I could do. But in saying that, ask me when I was like 21, 22, probably not. I'd be like, no, thank you.
Once again, like girls, if you approach in person, like, oh my God, I think once in my life I've been approached. And like I've had friends like you've only been approached, like it just does not happen. I find girls do not approach guys very, very rarely.
Oh my God, this is crazy. Only because me and my friends were just all for like approaching someone. I did it on the weekend. I was like, hey, how are you going? You're having a good night tonight, and had a conversation.
The confidence alone, even if I wasn't attracted to you, if you said like if you just walked up and said like introduce yourself and ask my number, I'd probably just give it because
it's you're like, here we go.
I'm so impressed. Like I'm on a date with you for sure.
All right, ladies in Sydney, if you're listening, you see Byron, just go approach him. He'll give his number.
But also, guys need to probably do it more as well, because once again, we're so conditioned to Tinder and online dating. And I did a whole episode on this actually. And we talked about ghosting and that whole hookup culture in Australia and all those different things. It's just a super fun topic to get into, I reckon.
Yeah, I think so. I could talk about it all day. But thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Where can everyone find you? How can they speak to you? I'll leave all your stuff in my show notes, but give a little rundown.
Just Instagram is probably the easiest. If it's just Byron Dempsey on Instagram, link in bio has all the links there. You can check out, you know, Apple, Spotify is the Driven Young podcast. If you know any Gen Zs or brothers or sisters in your life that you, you know, if you want to get them on that show, that'd be awesome. But Instagram, drivenyoung.com is a website. But if you just search Byron Dempsey or Driven Young, it should pop up.
Yes, and go stalk him on TikTok as well. Oh, I'll leave TikTok, it. Yeah, come on, that's how I found you.
my name, just Byron Dempsey.
Yes, thank you so much for coming on the Jessica Pennelly podcast. I appreciate your time and I had such good chats with you.
My pleasure. This was so much fun.
Yes, it was. We'll have to do it again. We'll have to progress with learning about dating apps and the difference and everything. Yes, thank you so much. Bye. Bye.